Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply. Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
All right, good to be with you. Into the 7 o'clock hour we go. Hour from now, John McClain will join us. He's brought to you by hornsolutions.net. Big congrats to Paul in... Come on, type it, Ben. Type it. Oh, Magnolia. Ben's typing in the rundown. I'm on the edge of my seat to find out where Paul lives that won the Whiskey Talk tickets. Paul, this is no disrespect to you. I know I sound like I'm chuckling. It's because Ben is keeping me on the edge of my seat. Magnolia, you said, Ben? Okay, that's a long drive in. Paul, if you make it, you are a true diehard fan. It'll be worth the trip, I promise.
I'm keen to hear city and town names right now, Sean, because I've been working with the kid on learning the state capitals, which I realized now I never actually did. Frankfort, Kentucky? Are you kidding me? I didn't have a clue.
Really?
That's the stupidest state capital I've ever heard.
Aren't states and capitals like a late elementary school kind of thing that you got to memorize?
We actually learned how to think at my school, Sean.
Oh, okay. Memorization. We just memorized stuff so we could get ready for the... We got hammered on standardized testing and memorizing stuff.
Yeah, yeah. No, we didn't. I was lucky. I went to a school where they were kind of like anti-memorization.
Okay.
They wanted you to... I never had to do a lot of the stuff that... That's just a good public school. It wasn't like... Was not some fancy no grade school or anything like that.
I was a public school kid too.
Yeah.
So, all right. Jeff Bagwell. I think Jeff Bagwell was the star of the show yesterday at the Jose Abreu press conference. Jeff Bagwell, who clearly has Jim Crane's ear on a lot of matters.
As somebody once said during the playoffs, and I'm blanking on her name right now, and I feel bad because she's a comedian who's a big Houston sports fan. But she said that there was a picture of Bagwell, and she had said that Jeff Bagwell looks like a musician who invented a music app and became a billionaire because of it. And that's exactly what he looks like.
He'll either be Jenny Johnson or
yes,
Diane Gallagher.
One it's Jenny Johnson. Jenny. Or was it Diane Gallagher?
I think it was Diane Gallagher.
Was it Diane Gallagher that said that? Yeah. Yeah. He looks like a billionaire who had invented a music app, that taught you like that did something musical on your phone. He looks like a wealthy musician, like
he does.
Keith Richards type. You
yep,
know?
Yep. Got the goatee going.
A little bit burlier than Keith Richards.
A little burlier, a little bit.
Yeah.
So Bagwell was asked yesterday if he thought that the Astros, if things had skewed too far in the direction of analytics with the Houston Astros.
Personally, for me, yes. I just think that there are certain things that go on that the numbers can't explain. Because this game is played by humans, man. It's not played by computers. And there's a lot of things that go on. You know, stuff that's in those doors over there or on the field. There's stuff that goes on at home. A lot of things that can happen throughout a year that mean something. And, you know, it affects players in certain ways. And being able to know that and being able to, that's what Dusty does so great is he knows his players so well on and off the field, which makes it a lot easier for him to manage because he has the communication with the guys and understands.
Yeah, and it was a little bit, you know, there's some confusion on, like, okay, was he talking about the Astros specifically or not? Because the Astros weren't referenced necessarily, or James Click wasn't referenced there. The way it was reported, there are a couple of quotes like this from Bagwell. It was reported like Bagwell was taking a shot specifically at James Click, whereas James Click was a guy that actually made it a little bit less analytical than when Jeff Luhnow was there. So I don't think it needs to be framed that way. I think it's fair enough to say, though, that, yeah, Bagwell thinks that with hitters, at least, that there's sometimes too much of it, and guys are focused too much on too many things all at once. As far, what he said about, okay, there's sometimes things going on at home that affect guys, I don't quite understand how that's inconsistent with using an analytical approach. Like, observing what's going on and that a player is doing things differently or might be able to tweak his technique doesn't, that's a whole separate topic from, you know, whatever might be going on in his personal life that might be causing it. And I think maybe without, like, Bagwell's not saying do away with it entirely. I think what he's trying to say is that, like, you got to look at the whole picture, you know, and you got to be able to have, people to say, like, okay, look, he was struggling with this, or his plate discipline was off, but what was going on with his plate discipline aside from his actual, you know, vision and his approach at the plate, you know, what was going on elsewhere, that's where a guy like Bagwell can be, I think, a big asset. But it doesn't, I get nervous when people start criticizing analytics, athletes and players and coaches especially, when I'm not quite certain they completely understand analytics.
I think you can summarize Bagwell's worldview of baseball very, very simply. The game is played by human beings, not computers.
Right.
And human beings have problems at home, and there's emotional things that affect them, and chemistry.
Sure. I'm like, okay, like, all right, if you're a race car driver, are you like, hey, that race car driver's got problems at home. Don't worry about the RPMs.
Yeah.
Those sound like numbers. What are you worried? What are you? You got all these engineers working on this here race car. Why in the hell would you do that?
Right.
This guy's got a kid that's got a bar mitzvah next week.
Right. Yeah. Right, exactly.
Like, what the hell? Exactly. Like where's the? I'm trying to figure out exactly where the human side of it can't be incorporated into the analytical side of it.
Here's another one from Bagwell. Bagwell was asked, "Is there anything though? We know where Bagwell stands on analytics." You know, he skews to the side of the human element. He acknowledges analytics, and he was asked, is there any specific part of analytics that you draw from and that you think is a good thing?
I think analytics is great for pitching. I think they can do a lot of things to help pitchers out. Spin rate, different positions in your arms, just different things that they do in pitching I think are great. And we've done a great job of developing pitching. We've done a great job of finding pitching. And then even big league guys that have gotten here have gotten better. So I totally believe in that. The shift is a shift. It's just the product of bad hitting. And guys make adjustments there. But obviously it's going back to the old way pretty much, which is fine. And, you know, hitting basics are just, I mean, I don't think you can reinvent the wheel there. But it certainly does a great job in pitching, and I'm all about that.
All right, real quick, one more from Bagwell, because he was asked to expound upon the hitting part of things. What is it about analytics that you don't think works for hitters?
I just get afraid that hitters get too much information. If you ask any hitter when they're going good, what are you thinking about? Their first answer is nothing. I don't want them thinking about 10 things when they're at home plate because they got to face that guy in front of them, and they got 8 dudes that can catch the ball even if you do it right. So I'm trying to dumb it down as much as possible.
Yeah, I think that's where I disagree with Bagwell in terms of what he says about other hitters, because I hear current great hitters talk quite a bit about stuff like this. I'm not concerned at all that somehow Bagwell's going to become GM and like do away with the analytics staff or anything like that. I think that Jim Crane is a guy that in his life probably has lots of people working for him who he only partly agrees with. And I think that he probably feels that with Bagwell, between his background, obviously, and his playing ability and everything else, has some really, really good input. And more importantly and critically, I think, can be the counterbalance to the extremely nerdy side of
things.
Like, there are probably people in the Astros organization that are way too nerdy and, like, break it down to way too many numbers, like, irrationally so. And then there are people like Bagwell. And I think a good owner, a good CEO, a good manager knows how to balance all of that input, and it's good to see things from a different perspective. So I think that Bagwell, because he is who he is going to have – I think the things he says publicly are going to be interpreted as almost like the voice of the organization, and I don't think that that's 100% true.
Yeah.
I think he's out there on the fringe side of the spectrum of what Astros employees and executives feel.
This is my feeling on analytics. Like when I hear Bagwell talk about the effect on pitching, the effect on hitters specifically, and they don't need to be thinking about anything. When I think of analytics, Seth, I think of decisions that are made above the level of the guys on the field. I think of decisions that are made in roster construction, in in-game decisions of who to use in certain situations.
Yeah.
Not that you're flooding a hitter with analytic information as he's walking into the batter's box. Dusty Baker is using analytics to decide, should I bat this guy behind this guy? Should I pinch hit here? That kind of thing. You know?
And a lot of it with batters, I think what a lot of it is good for is when a guy is actually hitting pretty well, but having bad luck, it lets you know that, hey, look, you're on the right track, man.
Right.
Because like Kyle Tucker at various times, like, look, you're actually doing the right things. Don't try to tweak anything. Don't try to change anything. We've got the proof for you right here. Here's a spreadsheet. You know what it says?
Yeah.
It says you've had bad luck, my friend.
Yeah.
And just keep doing what you're doing. So because I like everything with here too. There's a spectrum. I agree with a lot of what Bagwell's saying, but I also think that, and it's like this in basketball with the analytics, because that's another analytics heavy sport. Some players really thrive using it. Other players don't want to know anything about it at all. Some players do well when they hear a garbage can thump. Others don't want it at all. It's just, like Joey Votto, listen to Joey Votto talk about this kind of stuff. And going back to Joey Votto was he's a more analytically minded baseball player than, by that, I don't mean the actual numbers. I'm thinking about just how he's built. Like, he's going to hyper focus on various things.
Yep.
Than Jeff Bagwell was, you know? And, you know, like maybe Ted Williams. I think if Ted Williams were alive today, he would probably figure out a way to use a lot of the technological tools to his benefit. Not all of them. So that's where it's good to have, Bagwell, who can identify the guys that maybe everybody needs to back off on a little bit.
Yeah.
You know, like, listen, dude. This guy's having a rough time. You guys just gave him 10 bits of information, and he can't absorb all of that. What he needs to do is move his left foot in 1 inch, and let's see how that works out.
Yep.
You know, stop flooding this guy because he can't handle it.
Yeah, I like that. Bagwell was asked, do you want a larger role or the GM job with the Astros?
I want to do whatever Jim needs me to do. You know, I'm not pushing myself to do anything. I know I'm involved. I know I enjoy talking the game of baseball, and I certainly enjoy talking about us and how we can get better.
If Jim asked you to be the GM, you would want to do that?
I have no idea. That's not really a thought of mine right now. We got enough stuff going on right now. Things are working okay right now, so we'll figure that out when it's time.
Would you interview?
No, I would not interview.
Okay. Would you interview? No, I would not interview.
I don't do interviews. They just offer me jobs. Yeah, you think Leo Caprio auditions? Hell no.
No.
I'm not going to interview.
That's right.
I'm just going to walk in and take that job whenever I feel like
give
it.
Give me $20 million and I'm doing Titanic, baby. Hopefully not Titanic.
I don't think Bagwell has one part of him that wants to be a general manager.
I don't either. I think he has what he wants, which is influence. I think he's got influence. I think he feels invested in the Astros.
Yeah.
And I think he clearly has influence. There's no question. I think his fingerprints, I think, are on the Jose Abreu signing for sure. And I think the people that are nervous about the price tag for Abreu really feel like Bagwell's fingerprints are on it. Look, he was part of the recruiting trip to go sign Jose Abreu. Bagwell was very involved. I think the concerns that I've heard about Bagwell's involvement, and generally the concerns that I've heard about this era that we're in right now with the Astros, where it's kind of Jim Crane as the owner / GM, is that, okay, well, there sure is a lot of spending going on. Not a lot, but the first two signings they've made, the retention of Rafael Montero and the signing of Jose Abreu, are perceived by some folks to be, Montero for sure and Abreu probably, to be salaries that are over market. You know, would these have been acquisitions or signings that Jeff Luhnow, James Click for sure wouldn't have done these moves. I think Luhnow ultimately probably would have, especially if Crane really wanted them badly enough. But I think that's the concern that people have had, is not so much the players, because people love Montero and people love Abreu. They're good acquisitions. It's the price tag. Here's my take on that, Seth. If Jim Crane's fine with spending the money, and all of a sudden we don't enter some period 3 years from now where Jim Crane is being cheap, then let's go.
Right, right. Well, and I think that part of it, too, is I think perhaps the age element, spending that much money or what you perceive to be an overpay on guys who are older, especially with Abreu.
Yeah.
Montero's going to be 33 this year. Abreu is several years older than that, turning 36. So I think there's that, too. And I think my take on that part of it is I think that Jim Crane is doing exactly what he should be doing. If his philosophy is to not dole out 10-year contracts, he's taken a guy like Abreu, and instead of giving him a 10-year contract when he's 28 years old, he's just grabbing him at the age of 36 and saying, yeah, okay, it's worth it now. And instead of hoping that a guy is good in years 7, 8, 9, and 10 of a 10-year contract and paying him anyway, he's going to say, all right, these guys are good. I think the Astros have been aggressive in their load management. And that's another thing that I don't know. I'm sure Bagwell is opposed to load management too. Can you remember on a broadcast or not whether he is opposed to load management? I think they probably feel like and they, you know what? That's another thing. You're right about the analytics. How a lot of times most of it's done without the player even being conscious of it.
Right.
So like the load management, that doesn't put anything in a player's brain other than that. You remember Bagwell told that story. Who was it? He was in the middle of a rough stretch, like a really bad stretch at the plate. And he was
another player?
No, Bagwell was in the middle of a really he was in the middle of a real rough stretch. And he was slumping and they wanted him to take a break, and he was just flat out opposed to it. It was Phil Garner. Phil Garner told the story. So basically, we'll have to dig up the story. Phil Garner basically, waited to tell him until, right before the game so Bagwell wouldn't have any time to object to it. And Bagwell flipped the hell out because Bagwell is old school and he wanted to be out there, you know. So it sounded like Garner was getting ready for a fist fight to inform Bagwell that he wasn't going to play that night. And I could totally see him being opposed to load management.
I feel like anybody born before the year, 1970, definitely opposed to load management. Any athlete born before 1970, absolutely opposed to load management. Bagwell fits into that category. Jim Crane was asked at the Jose Abreu press conference yesterday, what's left to do? Are you guys done yet?
We've got a few more holes. I would say we've got to look at the catching and maybe another outfielder. And, you know, you never have enough pitching. So I think those are the spots that are fairly obvious.
Do you expect to stay under the CBT this year?
Don't know. We'll see where it ends.
All right, so that's...
We certainly have the ability to go to it and over it if we want to.
Sorry, Jim. Yeah, that's good news. They're ready to go over the luxury tax. This is not the first time he said we'll go over the CBT. I will say this is the first time where it feels like, especially if they want to bring back Verlander, where they might definitely go over the CBT. Like, if they bring Verlander back, and they want to make another acquisition at one of those other positions he was talking about, they're into luxury tax territory.
I think the interesting thing will be, if they're spending this money now, they're still, I don't think some people realize how young the pitching staff is. They're still well within the envelope of these guys still being in arbitration before Abreu's contract is up.
Yep.
So that's not going to be a consideration with the Montero or Abreu signings. And I wonder, how much of that has to do with maybe they are planning on playing it a little closer to the wire with some of the free agents. Because with Bregman, Bregman's a tricky one. You paid him. It was worth it like crazy that first year. But then it wouldn't have been worth it until the second half of this season when they gave him that extension early on. We'll see how it plays out with Yordan, obviously, and I'm optimistic that it will work out well. But I think that it's not like Jim Crane's going into this blind and spending like a drunken sailor on leave.
Right. We got a great text to the Trailer Wheel and Frame text page that I want to hit in the next segment here. The one thing that if the Texans are going to find a new coach, a new head coach, the one thing that I think most people, including myself, want them to do, we'll tell you what it is next.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/decide. That's linkedin.com/decide. Terms and conditions apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
All right, Payne and Pendergast with you on a Wednesday. John McClain joins us at 8 o'clock for his weekly visit. He's brought to you by hornsolutions.net. Got a lot to get into with John. Get his thoughts on the Jose Abreu signing. John really likes the ability to talk a little Astros, so we'll do that with him. We'll do some headlines a little later. We're giving away Whiskey Talk tickets as well sometime later on this hour. Each hour today, we are giving away tickets to the Yellow Rose Distillery Whiskey Talk. That'll be a week from yesterday. It'll be December 6th, 6 to 8 p.m. It's going to be a lot of fun. I would also encourage you at this point in time to download the Hutopia Football Podcast. That is me and John McClain getting you ready for Deshaun Watson coming back to Houston this Sunday. So download the Hutopia Football Podcast on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts. I have this text here, Seth, from the Trailer Wheel and Frame text page. Trailer Wheel 0983. I just want the Texans to interview normal, highly thought of candidates this time around. They didn't interview Saleh, McDaniel, or Daboll when they were looking for coaches these last couple of times. And that's kind of where I am right now, after Culley. And then I think we thought things were going to be more normal with Lovie Smith. And I guess to some degree, I don't know if they've been more normal or not. They're just not a good football team. That's the biggest problem I have. Normal, I can live with dysfunction and abnormality if they were playing watchable football right now.
Yeah. The funny thing about last year was that the Texans actually were pretty transparent about everything. That's why it was funny when people were claiming that we were pushing fake news that Josh McCown was a candidate. Like, no, that report came from the team itself.
You're talking about the search that ended up with Lovie was very transparent. Totally. Yeah. You're right. They tweeted out every time they interviewed somebody.
Right, right. So the candidates that were named on the website that were interviewed, Brian Flores, Joe Lombardi, the Chargers offensive coordinator, Jonathan Gannon, who's the Philadelphia Eagles defensive coordinator, and a name that's still being mentioned.
Yep.
Hines Ward, which was that felt like, okay, Hines Ward had never been discussed before, and it felt like maybe now he, unlike Josh McCown, has actually worked as a full-time professional college coach before.
Yes.
And he's Hines Ward.
He's in coaching, yes.
That felt like one of those, like, maybe dip your toe in the water type of interviews that came out of nowhere. Kevin O'Connell was interviewed, so I think fair to say that was a serious candidate, right?
Yeah. He might be coach of the year this year. He's in the mix. Yeah.
Josh McCown and Lovie Smith. So of that search, if you say like highly thought of guys, Kevin O'Connell, Jonathan Gannon, Joe Lombardi, Brian Flores. Now the Brian Flores one was a little convoluted as well. You know, because that was added in late in the process.
He sued the league, sued the Texans as well for not hiring him.
Yeah, yeah. So it was, but as far as, like, quote-unquote highly thought of candidates, I'd say several of those guys were. They ultimately weren't the ones that got jobs. And I don't know if Robert Saleh, I don't believe the Texans reached out to Robert Saleh, but as far as Daboll or Mike McDaniel or some of those other guys, you're never 100% sure who they actually talked to or who's, like, an agent might have shut it down before conversations even got started. There were, presumably there were some coaches last year who had other options that thought, like, well, I could go to the place that still has Deshaun Watson on the roster and I don't know what the hell's going on, or I could go elsewhere. Like, I think that I think that they might have been shut out of some of the other highly sought after candidates.
I think what's interesting, Seth, about that this previous coaching cycle, not just with the Texans and Lovie Smith, but with the overall cycle, there were 10 head coaching openings this past round of hiring back in January and February, whenever. There were 10 openings, and if you look at the list of guys that got hired, the list is split in half, basically. There's half the list is guys who are sort of new wave, young coach, forward-thinking, progressive kind of hires, the O'Connells and the McDaniels of the world. McDaniel of the world, not Josh McDaniels. The other half are guys who have been head coaches before. And if you look at this, I mean, other than Nathaniel Hackett, the guys who are first-time head coaches are all working out really well right now. Kevin O'Connell, the Vikings are going to win that division. Brian Daboll, up until a couple weeks ago, he was leading for Coach of the Year. I think the Giants are going to come back to earth, but there's no question he's done a good job thus far. Mike McDaniel, we got a firsthand look at that this week, and he's done an amazing job. And then Nathaniel Hackett, first-timer. And Matt Eberflus, and I know the Bears are bad right now, but I think we all thought the Bears were going to be bad coming into the season. And I will say this for the Bears that I won't say for the Texans. Until Justin Fields got hurt, they were at least playing a watchable brand of football. Like, it was fun to go to the stadium and watch Justin Fields. I would imagine, I haven't gone to any of those games, but I would imagine it was fun to go to Soldier Field and watch Justin Fields run for $150 and give you a chance to win all those games. Those are there's still five first-time head coaches that, other than Nathaniel Hackett, are all doing a pretty good job. You look at the other five. Todd Bowles, underperforming in Tampa Bay. Dennis Allen, you and I said this, disaster. Doug Peterson, I think he's going to be okay in Jacksonville, but it's not been great. I mean, they're like the 11th overall pick right now. They haven't turned it around fully. Josh McDaniels just now is getting it turned around. And Lovie Smith, it's been, we know what it's been here.
I would hesitate to read too closely into that, though, just because, all right, then by that logic, you shouldn't have hired Andy Reid. Okay, by that logic, you shouldn't have hired Mike McCarthy. There's not, you know, in any given year, sometimes a lot of young guys get hired, and sometimes a lot of old guys get hired. Sometimes it's split, and there's never any rhyme or reason to it if you break it down over long term.
No, that, I mean, I think that's good advice for fans. I think my point in pointing that out is I think this is why people feel like how the texter feels, is that these hires, a lot of them are working out very well. A lot of them are offensive driven. I know Saleh isn't, but he comes from the Shanahan tree, so he's got a Shanahan disciple. He's got the other LaFleur running his offense. I think that's the hard part, Seth, when you're watching a team who's going to draft a young quarterback probably, and you're watching them this year, and they're generating 5 yards of offense in a half. They're generating 32 yards of offense in a half. Those are the last two games, the most recent performances. And then you look around the league, and you go, man, they got Kevin O'Connell in Minnesota, who's getting a career year out of Kirk Cousins. They've got Brian Daboll, who's turned Daniel Jones into a serviceable quarterback. Mike McDaniel, the job he's done with Tua, has made me not want to even get near Brian Flores as a human being, let alone a head coach. My God.
Mike McDaniel was up talking the other day about how he kind of had to repair Tua psychologically.
Yes!
That wasn't the phrase he used, but that he was kind of damaged in a lot of ways.
Yes!
Because he hadn't been able to work to his strengths. So he had to be cognizant of that. I do think when Mike McDaniel was up there talking about that, I did think of D'Amico Ryans, who played for the Texans, defensive coordinator for the 49ers right now and doing a great job out there. I do think, like, D'Amico would be another guy who, like Saleh, has a lot of familiarity with the Shanahan system. That's what he's been in, the Kubiak-Shanahan system. Like, he's worked with a lot of those coaches and played for Gary Kubiak, obviously. And I think that without hiring an offensive coach, he might actually be the best guy that, like, okay, you never know whether these offense coordinators are actually going to be good head coaches, but you hire them because then at least you won't lose your offensive coordinator if it does work out. With D'Amico, I like the idea of catching kind of some of the guys that are offensive coordinators who prove that they're not good head coaches, and then catch them on the rebound on the way back down. And like D'Amico might be perfect for finding an offensive coordinator like that, or working with the young up-and-coming guys and knowing how to replace them.
If I'm D'Amico, D'Amico is going to be in demand this offseason. I don't think there's any question about that. D'Amico played it perfectly. He was interviewing for jobs, first interviews, I think the Minnesota job last year, and he pulled his name out because he wanted to go back and coach another year. it's almost like staying in school for another year. You know, like I think DeMeco is going to be the bell of the ball when the hiring cycle rolls around. If I were DeMeco looking at this opportunity, I would want a lot of clarity on certain things. You know what I mean? Like, what are you using the first overall pick for? Because they're gonna hire a coach before they draft somebody.
Yeah.
I would want to know, what are you doing with the first overall pick? What are you planning on doing with the 10th overall pick or whatever it is?
What are we doing in free agency this year?
Yes. Do I get to bring guys over? Am I hiring my staff? Are you hiring my staff? Like, I don't think DeMeco's going anywhere where he doesn't bring his guys with him.
Yeah, I don't know. Like, when Anthony Weaver took the defensive coordinator job, I don't know if he would have taken that job if he had known that the team wasn't going to do a single thing to improve the defense.
Eric Murray was going to be their big splurge on defense?
Right, that had gotten destroyed in the playoffs against the Chiefs. I don't know if he would have taken that or not. So that's the question. That's one of those questions you have to ask. Sean, I don't think I've had – I think I drank decaf this morning or something. Because I'm doing that thing where my brain is getting ahead of my mouth, and I realized I've realized a couple times I've said things that didn't make any sense because when I don't have enough coffee, I go too fast in some ways.
Okay.
So, yeah, it's weird. So what I was trying to say was, I like the idea of a guy like DeMeco Ryans as a defensive coach in catching one of those failed head coaches who still is like a brilliant offensive mind as he gets fired. Bring him into the fold.
Okay.
You know, the Josh McDaniels or somebody like that.
Yeah, maybe. I'm all for him just bringing some – you know what? Just inject us full of Shanahan people. Like, that seems to be working. Shanahan and McVay people seems to be working in a lot of places.
The Shanahan side of Deshaun Watson, Deshaun's playing in a Shanahan-style system now. There's one specific part of that that I'm eager to see whether he gives a damn and pays attention to it, because he was very, very lackadaisical with this thing when he was in Houston. Kevin Stefanski, the coach, noticed it and brought it up to him when he was meeting with him. So this will be the first chance to see if he's actually fixed this one element of his game.
The play fakes, yeah.
Oh, I was teasing.
Oh, that was a tease?
A tease there.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay.
That's all right. So it's a play fakes, everybody.
Sorry.
See ya.
I didn't know.
I thought maybe, you know. Like, my brain was moving too fast.
I didn't know that was a tease.
I apologize. My
bad. Fault. I didn't know if you had said play fakes at the beginning of that, because I knew exactly what you were talking about. I'm sorry, Seth. My brain was moving too slow.
Apologize to me. Apologize to the
audience.
People who are now going to turn the station off.
Well, how about this instead? One of the strangest bits of audio about Aaron Rodgers that you are ever going to hear from a former teammate of Aaron Rodgers. We will have that for you next. Also, join the drive with Sterner and Hughley, Stadium Bar in Spring for a Miller Lite Football Friday. This Friday, 2 to 6, hang out with the guys, have some great food, cold drinks, get ready for Deshaun Watson's return to Houston on a Miller Lite Football Friday. Headlines as well next. We're going to give away some Whiskey Talk tickets as well very, very shortly here.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify is got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odyssey podcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odyssey podcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/odyssey podcast.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Live from the Twin Peaks Studios, Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
Oh, man. Looking at the TV screen in here. Business Watch. McDonald's giving away McGold cards. Free food for life.
Wait, what? Free food for life?
Free food for life.
Well, I guess it'll be kind of a they cut cost by having you eat at McDonald's 3 times a day. It's a shorter.
Been a while since I've had McDonald's. I love McDonald's, but it's been a while because I feel like McDonald's is sort of a gateway for me back to being rotund.
It's hard to eat a breakfast sandwich and not eat a breakfast sandwich every day for the next three
weeks. Yes, their breakfast
with an increasing amounts.
Very good.
It's like, well, if an Egg McMuffin is only 300 calories, right. Why should I not have 7 of them?
That's exactly that's like, right. Shh, don't tell me arithmetic. It's 300 calories.
I've read several articles saying that high sodium is overblown unless you have high blood pressure. Honey, don't you have high blood pressure? Shut your mouth, Brandy. Shut your mouth.
You know who's been reading articles? DeShone Kizer, former NFL quarterback and former teammate, briefly, of Aaron Rodgers.
Also a Golden Domer. Speaking of golden tickets, golden domers.
And this is, okay, well, let's play the audio.
This is
and
the
now.
Entire reason we're playing this.
Oh, my God.
Because you earlier admitted to going to a cut-rate trash school, high school. Now you're gonna show off the educational majesty of Notre Dame.
Yeah, this is what happens. Yeah, DeShone Kizer, former Notre Dame quarterback as well. Thank you, Seth. He was teammates with Aaron Rodgers briefly in Green Bay, and on a podcast, is it Brenneman podcast? I think it was the podcast. I'll have to go back and look at the YouTube. My apologies, but he was asked by the host about meeting Aaron Rodgers for the first time, and here's what DeShone Kizer had to say.
Shut the door, and the first thing that that comes out of Aaron Rodgers' mouth was, "Do you believe in 9/11?" What? Do I believe in 9/11? Yeah, I mean, why wouldn't I? He was like, "You should read up on that." Okay. Now we start learning about the playbook and stuff. I'm like, wow. Like, I don't know where this is going. But what it ended up being was just like a real thought experiment where he wanted me to go back and, you know, look into some of the conspiracies around it and provoked a lot of great conversation. And we really bonded over that. And, you know, we started sharing some books and talking about some other things and got into history and business and finance.
You have any other conspiracy theories?
Talked about some inner Earth, moon landing.
The moon? Oh, he's probably got some crazy theories on the moon.
Reptile
landing.
People. Y'all are laughing. Go do your research. I'm telling you. Go do your research. Yeah, I might have to take you guys to Agartha. I'm telling you. Do your research. You guys are laughing. This isn't. It sounds like jokes, but like I'm.
Okay, so that's where I got. Honestly. Even at the very end there, I went back and I watched it like 4 times to figure out whether he was joking, like if he was being sarcastic or not. But it looked like he actually got a little agitated towards the end.
Yeah.
But it cut off. So, it was a brilliant tease because now I have to actually go and watch the entire
watch
damn
the
thing.
Brenneman show. It is the Brenneman show, by the way. Yeah. Yeah.
Because at the beginning of it, he sounded like, you know, yeah, this is what it is. It's Aaron Rodgers is a little crazy with the conspiracy theories. And then when he started talking about some of the conspiracy theories, I can see how people can get wrapped into some of the conspiracy theories, mm-hmm. especially, like, honestly, you go on YouTube, and it's terrifying how well produced some of these videos are.
Yeah.
And if you don't, all you were to do was to watch and read those and nothing else, I think you could get wrapped into it. But especially, but when I hear like inner Earth and reptile people and stuff like that, that's where it gets way out on the fringe. Like I've dabbled into those just to see what it's about. And like, I feel like you have to almost consciously believe that nothing is real to go in there. So I don't know if Deshaun was into it or not. I choose to believe that Aaron Rodgers was saying as a thought experiment. Is that the word that Deshaun did? Deshaun,
I think so, yeah. Experiment? I think, yeah.
Kind of like to challenge what you think you know or assume you know about things, that you should go read this. Because then, like, okay, if you see this conspiracy, then you have to disprove the conspiracy and prove that you actually believe it. Which is, this is actually, like, other things that you learn in school, sometimes you realize later in life, oh, I don't actually know it all that well. And you learn it because somebody says something crazy on the internet. And you're like, wait a second. Wait, really? And then you research and you're like, oh, God, that person was just lying. So maybe Rodgers is just talking about that. But kind of like challenging yourself about how much you really know about everything. I don't know, what do you believe? Do you believe 9/11? I don't know what that means. Like, what? But please tell me that he's skeptical that, like,
feels a little Alex Jones-ish.
please tell me that he doesn't believe that, like, 9/11 didn't happen at all. Like, does he have, like, is he squabbling with some of the details about it or something? I don't know. But please don't tell me that he believes that.
Damn, Deshaun Kaiser. Man, we're just now getting past the Manti Te'o thing as Notre Dame people. Kaiser talking about lizard people in the middle of the earth, and
that Deshaun Kaiser documentary, or excuse me, that Manti Te'o documentary was, a lot of people said that, a lot of people were saying that we owe Manti Te'o an apology and everything. I was just the opposite. I came out of that feeling like, dude, all right, it sounds kind of like you were trying to blow off your girlfriend forever that didn't actually exist, and then, you know, something bad happened to her, but you're an idiot in 18 different ways, and it sounds like you were kind of like being a jerk to her at the time too,
dude.
Even though she wasn't even real. And like, and now you can't even laugh about it. Come on, Bill Buckner, your way to glory here on this thing.
This is where, here's where I'm at with Manti Te'o, and we'll get to the headlines here in just a second after that documentary, as long as we're bringing it up. When it reached the point where a normal person would go, okay, can I at least see what you look like on this video call that we're having right here? Like, remember the person on the other end was like, no, I can't, I don't want you to see me. Like,
how many years are you with this person without video calls? And I know the internet wasn't. No, you know what? The internet was fine back then.
Yeah,
the internet was awesome already, especially at college.
Right.
Those kids have had awesome internet for decades in college. So, yeah, the sense I got from that Manti Te'o documentary was, in my mind, it sure felt like he talked about how he was kind of letting the adulation and fame get to him too much, and he was kind of pushing her off. Like, it sounds like Manti might have been enjoying. Remember when he said, like, he was, oh, far from it. Somebody asked him if he was gay.
Yeah.
He said, oh, far from it.
Yeah.
I think he broke a lot of hearts in Notre Dame. And, if anything, I'm starting to fall back more on the conspiracy side of things.
Here we go.
Here's the thing.
Okay.
The lizard people are real. Inner Earth is not only real but thriving,
yep,
Sean.
Yep.
I've got timeshares there. And Manti Te'o orchestrated the whole thing.
Okay, this is what we need. This is what we need.
To win the Heisman.
We need Deshaun Kaiser's take on the Manti Te'o situation. That's what we need. At the nexus of the universe, Deshaun Kaiser is opining on Manti Te'o and the conspiracy theory. All right, let's get to headlines. John McClain jumps in.
And by the way, everybody, I'm not going to be reading any of the conspiracy theories you throw at me at the text line.
Because
far be it, you're not the first person, all right? Like, read up on it. I read up on it. I read up on conspiracy theories because, honestly, like, at one point in time, the Mafia was a conspiracy. Like, people thought it was a kooky conspiracy. All these Italians who at the time were a lot of anti-Italian sentiment from people back then. Like, these Italians figured out a way to organize all their criminals together. Sure, buddy, smoke another one. They called them doobies back then. Smoke another doobie. And it turned out to be true.
It did.
But I would tell you that 99% of the time, it's a bunch of people that are just psychotically whacked out, and you're actually just, you're trying real hard because you want to believe it, not that because you're actually finding evidence.
Yeah, but that 1%, dude, the 1%. No.
Yeah.
All right, let's.
But I'm open to them. I'm open to all conspiracy theories.
Yeah, they're fun to read. All right, let's.
Payne and Pendergast with today's headlines, brought to you by BaywayJeep.com.
Ken really wanted us to get to headlines badly there. Jim Crane and Jose Abreu and Jeff Bagwell met with the media yesterday to introduce the latest in the lineage of Astro first baseman. That was pretty cool, like circle of life. We had Bagwell there for the introduction of Jose Abreu to be the next big power hitting, slugging first baseman for the Astros. So it was good. It was a good introductory press conference. The big thing people want to know now that Abreu is in the fold is, are we done yet, Jim Crane, with the moves?
We're active. I mean, we'll stay active in the market. Certainly, Yearly's in the mix. As I mentioned before, Verlander's in the mix. And, you know, we're looking at other options. So we're not finished. We like our team with, you know, pitching strong. This adds another bat. But we think we can improve a little bit more.
I think the three big names, he touched on two of them, Seth. The three big names for the Astros that were Astros last season that people are wondering about. Yuli for sure, Verlander definitely. Michael Brantley is the other name that gets tossed into the mix.
Yeah.
And I don't know if it's telling that Crane didn't mention Brantley there. I think it's been pretty well established that the Astros aren't going to do anything on Brantley until probably the spring when they can check his shoulder out and see
right,
if it's
right.
Working.
Yeah, that's their on record as saying that. Yes. I'm glad you brought that up, Sean, because I think a lot of people, yesterday it was trending. Brantley was trending. And most of the tweets I saw about it were people saying, all right, bring Brantley back. Bring Brantley back. Bring Brantley back. I think first they want to see how his shoulder heals. Second, you got to be conscious of the composition of your team because you're. As much as I feel like this is old school math, and Jeff Bagwell would approve, that's going to be my new barometer. Does Jeff Bagwell approve of this math? I think that once you've got a certain number of any old guy's got a greater chance of getting injured. You know, Abreu's been very durable, but he's older. There's a greater chance of getting injured now than when he was 26 or so. So the more you tempt fate with that by having more old guys on your team, it just doesn't work out over time. You know, now the analytics types would figure out how many games every 3 years that costs you because you've got older guys. Bagwell would just say something folksy like, you know, give me a folksy saying, Sean, about old people.
A folksy saying?
Yeah, you gotta put them out on an ice floe at some point. That's what they say.
Okay.
So I think that's what Brantley is up against now. They just re-signed Montero. You know, he's reaching into his mid-30s. Abreu is going to turn 36 this year. And they probably want to be careful about just how many old position players they have.
I think there's a bit, I think it's a really good point. I think the other thing.
It's an incredible point, except the ice flows part.
But the part about the age thing is, and not wanting to be too old of a team, I think is a good point. I think the thing with Brantley is that unlike Yuli, I don't think there's a market out there for Yuli other than being a backup utility type that wants to hang around with the Astros for another year for a few mil. I think with Brantley, and I don't know if teams will take a chance on him in free agency, like they'll take a look at the shoulder. Maybe it's not fully healed yet, but they've got trainers that go, but this is how it normally heals. I could see some team like Seattle, Toronto, one of these kind of young teams like the Astros were in 2017, I could see Brantley being like the Brian McCann, Carlos Beltran, Josh Reddick signings back in 2017 for the Astros. A veteran guy, maybe you're overpaying a little bit for him, but a steady bat, a really good leader. You know, we heard the story. Best thing that happened to Brantley was that story getting out after Game 3 of the World Series that he gave the team a big talking to.
Yeah.
So I think that's Brantley's market. I think there's going to Tampa Bay is a team. I think there's going to be some team that is a playoff team, but not an elite team that feels like they need an injection of veteran leadership that's going to pay Brantley, I think.
Sean, the best part about the Brantley story was he gathered everybody around the batting cages and basically said, come on, guys, we're better than this. I'm tired of sad hugs at the end of World Series. And the Astros were so motivated and inspired. They said it was the best speech they'd ever heard. That they went out, and in the next three games, they had a couple really good innings of hitting.
Yeah.
I was like, We went out on a tear for those two innings, I'll tell you.
He tore into the team. He tore into the hitters, and they went out and threw a combined no-hitter in the next game. Yeah.
In one glorious fifth inning.
Right. That was right. Totally. Oh. I know. That
Those like, guys, well, they heard it from behind the fence. The whoever was, the pitchers were over, you know, they
right.
were in earshot. They
right,
heard it.
Right. Yeah. You know, Brantley's making a lot of good points over there. Let's go throw a no-hitter today. All right. Jim Crane was asked, where are you at right now on hiring a new GM?
We're assembling candidates and talked to a few people. We're not in any big rush. I wouldn't expect anything till January. The front office is working fine, as you can see. Bill Ferkus and Jeff Bagwell actually flew to Miami and helped negotiate part of the deal. So our guys are experienced. We promoted two guys, Ferkus to assistant GM and Charles Cook to an assistant GM, both with ample years of experience here and knowing how everything works. So we're full speed ahead.
As far as I think sometimes people do get too hung up on titles, and I'm not trying to sound like Bill O'Brien back in the days of the flat organizational chart, but it is weird in sports where I think the standard model is in you've got a GM, you've got a coach slash manager, and then you've got an owner. There you go. And then you might have a team president that handles the business side of things. It doesn't always have to be that way. And I think a lot of teams are more fluid than that structure is. A lot of times they almost do it just because it makes it easier to compare, you know, to give competitive salaries, all that, if you have the equivalent position. But I wouldn't be surprised if the Astros kind of settle into some kind of non-traditional structure.
Could be.
If there might be, you know, the analytics and the player guy. Okay, Jeff Bagwell won't be GM. He won't interview for the job, but he'll sure as hell be a co-GM.
Do you think there's a chance that they don't hire a normal, conventional general manager for this team? That's what it sounds like.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's just weird. I guess it's always struck me as strange because when I came into the NFL with the Jaguars at the time, it was a very good team. Tom Coughlin was the coach. Michael Hug had the position that would typically be called general manager, but I think he was the team president at that point, but he handled the contract negotiations and everything. But I think it was kind of like, without calling Tom Coughlin the GM, he was the GM. It might be a little bit like it is with Popovich with the Spurs, where
it's a good analogy.
Yeah, it's just not a traditional structure.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with three lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.